This is Susan Robb for Teachers for a New Era. I'm talking with Art Spiegelman and Françoise Mouly. Art Spiegelman is one of the world's best-known graphic artists. He won the Pulitzer Prize in 1992 for his groundbreaking graphic novel about the Holocaust, Mouse. He was honored with the Guggenheim Fellowship, nominated for the National Book Critics Circle Award, and named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People. Françoise Mouly has been art director for the New Yorker magazine since 1993, and she's been responsible for about 700 of the magazine's covers. Prior to coming to the New Yorker, Ms. Mouly was founder, publisher, co-editor, with her husband, Art Spiegelman, of the avant-garde comics anthology Raw, launched in 1980. In 2000, she founded Raw Jr., which published Little Lit, which were anthologies of comics for kids. In 2008, Ms. Mouly launched Toon Books, a line of hardcover comics for emerging readers. And it's the first high-quality comics line designed for kids ages 4 and up. Now, Françoise, I wanted to ask you, why did you start Toon?
I started Toon because I personally love books. It's something that has enlightened my life from the time I was a kid, and even now that's what I am passionately interested in, is making books. And I wanted to share that not just with my kids, but with the generations that will come after my kids, with as many kids as possible. I want the future to include books for as many kids as possible.
What about, you've said, I've heard you say, comics are more than just illustrated books. And, you know, I was thinking that may not be apparent to some people at first glance. So can you walk us through that a little bit?
Yes. Illustrated books are the first one that you will show to your children, to your very young children. But we were talking earlier to someone who was trying to get a very young kid, a two-year-old, into reading comics. Comics are actually a complex system of communication with a lot of abstract symbols and facial expressions, sound effect, time passing between one panel and another. It's a language in and of itself. It's related to picture books because it uses pictures. It can have similar stories and characters, but it's a medium that is excellent at carrying a visual narrative, whereas in an illustrated book, the story tends to be told in the words and the pictures accompany the words.
When I've functioned as an illustrator, which has been part of my checkered past as well as being a comics artist, the illustrator's always going for the money shot. You read like a lot of words and you find the image that concretizes those and often robs that text of some of its own information in order to be able to make a good picture. So that if you were reading about this woman with beautiful snowy white hair and a lithe, graceful look like a tree, like a willow or whatever, that's what you're going to draw. And by the time you read the words after having seen the picture, you're going, yeah, okay. And comics is very specifically the co-mixing. Comics with, in that sense, if you misspell it as Celo and my ex, as I did in my underground comics making days, you're really talking about co-mixing the words in the pictures so that part of the information is traveling through each of those sign systems. And often the story is being told in a much more moment-to-moment way, in the sense, not like a film, but so that you're kind of making a film in your head from seeing those moments portrayed. And they're not just the key moment, they're the in-betweens, as if you were an animator, you might refer to it. And that allows for a different way of using the pictures to give information.
You know, one of the things that struck me in your book, your tune book, Jack in the Box, we were looking at that, and if you skip the pictures and just read the words, there's a lot of, you know, noises. That's what it would sound like, is all noise, but or one word things, but it wouldn't tell you what the picture was. So, I mean, is it having a lot to do with interpreting white space, or, well, it's not white space, it's drawn space?
Well, for me, comics are time turned into space. And that means that what you're getting is something that you're bringing to life, but that is including the verbal information, the visual information, so that one can't exist without the other. I would have had no idea how to even script Jack in the Box if I was just a writer. And if I was drawing it and couldn't write, I wouldn't have been able to make that particular articulation of pictures. It was really built to make a certain thing happen at a certain rhythm and a certain pace. And the rhythm and pace were as much the narrative that's being given as whatever content might be reduced to in the one paragraph description of the book.
In many ways, comics are related to a kind of handwriting, and it is a handwriting of somebody who actually can draw some things and write the words for others and is presenting them in a specific order. So I think the distillation that happens in making a comic makes it a very rich reading experience. When I was talking to Michael Bix, who has a comic book project, so it's like children in after school get interested in making their own story, when they sit down to tell a story in comics format, they realize how complicated it is. It's not just picture caption, but it's choosing the crucial moment in a story, or as Art was saying, not necessarily the money shots, but the telling moments, background details, some of the things that the kids appreciate in reading a comic book is that it can give you the texture of daily life in a way that even novels don't always go for this, but here you can get to see how people are dressed and the cafes that they're sitting in, and if you're reading manga, you have like a totally foreign culture that you feel very eased into, a complex world that is shown through big and small details.
Well, William Hogarth was a precursor to Charles Dickens, and Dickens found him very important in terms of trying to understand what it would mean to describe London. So that both disciplines have their ways of getting at something. And to me, what's really exciting with comics is this thing that has to do with beats. I was talking to Jules Pfeiffer about one comic strip he had done that takes place in the dark. It's just white lettering with a little arrow of where the characters would be. In this particular strip done for Playboy, they were in bed and they were talking, and there's a three-panel pause, just three black panels. And I said, what made you do it that way? And he said, well, I grew up with Jack Benny and learned that timing is everything. Tried it with two panels, it didn't work. Four was too many, I needed the three. And then later on, when he has a black panel elsewhere in the strip, it's just one, because you've already learned how to give measure and time to that one box. Now, that's part of the secret language of comics, but even though it's very hard to become a master of the telling and using of all of these different sign systems, the graphic design, the illustration, the lettering itself is part of that mastery that you need to be able to make comics. It's hard to do, but it's really easy to assimilate when it's done well at the artist's end. It goes in very smoothly. And when Francois says she wanted to make these books to share books with kids, it was because it seemed so urgent that kids learn to love the reading. It's not a matter of teaching them how to read without being aware of visual information, but if the visual information is actually more effective than any other method one could find for getting them to want to crack that code and learn what those words mean, because then you'll understand why that bunny is upset in that panel, that's a worthy goal. Françoise has found a way of making that goal easier to reach, how to like understand written language, and it's the mission that's driven this whole Toon Books project forward.
Because I think in many ways, visual literacy is actually more intuitively present than word literacy. Mm-hmm. So children cannot help understanding pictures. There's something called the Tapfer effect, and it's named after the inventor of comics, Rudolf Tapfer, who did the first comics in the 1830s. And it's a concept that's used in computer technology when you do a computer interface. And the Tapfer effect is that you cannot help but project anthropomorphic characteristic even on a teapot or on a toaster, on a computer, on an R2-D2. You will posit, the human mind will posit as much as readily as is available two eyes, a mouth, and feelings of angers or joys or elation. Now, kids read this into the drawings, and it's very helpful for them to have the facial expressions and to see the modulation, the pitch of a story through all of the different modes that comics can travel through. So some of it is the size of the lettering. When somebody's shouting, there's just big, bold lettering, and that communicates something. And the expression on the character is that he's angry. And the size of that panel, the artist may have made it a full-page splash panel, so that it has a kind of importance. Once they see all this without actually being able, without needing to be taught, the same way they have to be taught about if you put an A and an N, it makes this sound. Those things are kind of like cartoonists. A lot of those conventions exist across cultures, and cartoonists all agree on certain ways of representing things, and some basic ways of representing things. It's very helpful to get kids to make the story happen in their head, which is the basic of reading.
Yeah, I've been fond of saying that comics get past the critical radar because comics work the way the brain works, which is to say, we think in language, but we think in little bursts of language. We don't think in full, windy paragraphs. It's just a cluster of abstract thoughts that have some words, language connected to it, that then become sentences. Comics require the efficiency of keeping to the number of words that can fit in a speech balloon that won't crush the character underneath it. The images in comics at their best are not really like illustrations, paintings, holograms. They're icons, and we think that way. We think in terms of a kind of pictogram rather than a kind of hologram, and comics turns that into an actual grammar.
I have a question. Is it different when you're, in your case, doing comics for the age group that you are for Toon, and when you are looking at things, Françoise, for children, is there a difference in how you would think about the actual design or the mechanism of comics?
Oh, well, for me, it was a project unto itself that had its own requirements and limitations. Everything I make is built around one set of limitations, self-imposed or another. I like the fact that a page always remains the same size and you can divide it up different ways, but it's not like I'm now going to have a bigger page. So that's just a given limitation with making comics for books. And I would say that here, the requirement was a real precision and clarity. That in order to not let the mind wander through the pictures only, but move from one picture to the next as if it was from one sentence to the next in a paragraph that would be made up by the double page spread, it required a real focusing on my part of what could be in those pictures that would move you where you needed to go at the pace one wanted you to go at, and then allow you to move in through the pictures and look at them in more detail some other visit. But you're being kind of propelled along by a kind of focusing of attention. That's true in all comics, but it becomes especially important when making a comic for a little kid who's never been exposed to anything like this before.
What about comics as an education tool? What roles do you think this can play?
Well, I would hope that it will play a very big role, but will not be so perverted that then it will turn off the pleasure principle. Part of the reason kids love comics is that they're not made to read them and they can discover them, and I think that that's one of the reasons that sometimes parents dismiss comics, because kids like them, so they can't possibly be learning anything from them. In reality, teachers have found that if they introduce a book in the classroom, the kids will be eager to read the book and to discuss the book. So not just to read it, but to reread it and to go into the mechanics of how the book was made. One of the fascinating things for me is as soon as the books entered into the classroom and teachers sent us lesson plans, all of the lesson plans seem to be about the semantic of comics. It's such high-level deconstruction of the mediums, because the kids want to talk about what's a speech balloon, what's a thought balloon, why is type bigger here, why is yesterday I was in the classroom and a little boy came over and said, like, I have noticed something. I can see that, like, all of your books are made with, like, the title over here, and you have, like, three pictures in the front, and it shows you that it's a comic strip, and those books are different from all the other books that they give us, because the other books they give us, there's a picture here and there's text there and there's a picture here and text there, but in your books you have speech balloons, and that's how people talk, and I like dialogue. And I was like, whoa, can well, I
that's,
hire you?
That's right. I mean, I would say that kids become immersed in the text because the text is literally immersed in the picture, and that allows them into it very specifically. Another, when you talk about how can it be used in education, there are a number of ways, because comics are a medium, somehow value neutral. You can have bad uses of a medium and good, but it's clear that comics are useful as an extension of the kind of diagrams you look at in an airplane seat of how to get out of the plane if something goes wrong. There's a certain kind of visualization of information that makes it very useful for certain kinds of step-by-step recipe giving. It's one thing that comics can do well educationally. There's another thing, which is the level on which we've entered into it, which has to literally do with teaching language and reading skills. But then there's another kind of thing that allows you to learn, because comics stand still the way an instructional video won't. Because I remember, like, libraries used to have festooned all over their halls some kind of banner that would say, reading is fundamental. And yeah, but really what's actually even more to the point is rereading is fundamental. Because at that point, you're having to examine, analyze, deconstruct, and understand what you're looking at. And comics sort of encourage that, because they will take you and narratively, as I was saying before, guide you through. But ultimately, what they also let you do is revisit and understand what you've been guided through.
Another thing that I was interested in your views on, which is how are comics perceived in this country and compared with the how they are elsewhere, like, you know, in Japan with manga and different. So over time, how have they been perceived, and what's your view now?
It's evolving very, very fast. When we first did Raw Magazine in 1980, it was specifically to try to influence the negative view that comics had in the U.S. That was born of excesses in the kid culture of the 50s and 60s, which had seen a lot of quickly produced comics, some of which were not maybe that great for kids, in horror comics that went quite far in terms of unbridled storytelling. But the baby had been thrown out with the bathwater, and comics as a whole had been condemned. A comics code had been established, which had killed any kind of joy in producing the books, or a lot of it at least, and it had devolved into a very limited, all that comics meant in the U.S. when I first came in the mid-70s was superhero comics. That's all people knew, and that's what the industry had been reduced to. The medium had been reduced to a narrow segment. It's as if there was no more literature and you could only get science fiction. I mean, it just seemed very limiting. In Europe, where I grew up, that those excesses did not take place, and comics were a more diverse, broad-ranging medium, more focused for children than for grown-ups. But after the explosion of underground comics that took place in the U.S. in the 60s and early 70s, there was a rather swift transition in France and Italy and Spain toward comics for grown-ups, and there were satirical magazines that had never gone away, and a blending of the two, so that people, our generation, read comics as well as Jacques Derrida and Jean-Paul Sartre and anything else that they read. There was no... it actually was quite hip to read comics, but everybody did it. And here, it has evolved to the point where the fruit of the work that we did back in 1980 have been born, and suddenly Mouse, the arts book, has been a landmark in changing perception of what comics can do. When it's hard to remember, but when Art was working on Mouse, and he was working on it for 13 years, the idea of a comic book about the Holocaust was inconceivable, unacceptable. It was so provocative. I mean, Art was derided of having even thought of doing a comic book about the Holocaust. Now we take it as the first step from which everything else is built, and that has certainly opened many, many, many doors, partly because it was so impossible. So now it's not as inconceivable to have a comic book about your father being gay, for example, such as Fun Home by Alison Bechdel.
Well, Holocaust comics are a subgenre. I've seen at least a half dozen of them that have come along since Mouse, but at first that sounded like an oxymoron, and I understand where that's coming from. I just never held the prejudice against comics that was standard. When I was growing up and wanting to be a cartoonist, this was like, gee, when I grew up, I'd love to be a plumber. You know, it was not like aiming very high, and if I had art skills, they should be applied to becoming a painter, or at that time illustration was still a viable profession, at least an illustrator, if one could actually tell stories and use language well, a writer, but never let the twain meet and become this unresponsive bull, mutt-like alloy.
Well, taking it from that, so this is some of where we've come, where do you see us going? I mean, now obviously there's multimedia, there's the internet, there are all kinds of things going on in sort of an explosion of mediums. How does that tie in, do you think, with this?
Well, one thing that's obviously going to happen is more and more things will be read on screens, and things will be made for those screens. And it's logical, because comics have been the history of reproduction almost from their beginnings. Hogarth's Rake's Progress, those were engravings, individual images with text engraved underneath backwards. Topfer, who came up in conversation before, was the first comics artist because he found a kind of offset lithography that allowed him to draw and write reading and reproduce his actual marks on paper directly. This allowed for a much more fluid interaction of the words and pictures than could be done with, say, woodblocks with typeset below it. The high-speed printing presses invented by William Randolph Hearst and Pulitzer gave rise directly to the Sunday comics. An overflow of those comics, of that kind of printing technology, more presses than they needed at any given moment, gave rise to using those presses to make comic books. The rise of short-term offset presses is what allowed underground comics to happen, where you could make something printed that looked like a newspaper or a comic book, but could be done in much smaller editions with much less cost for printing. Now the internet. The internet is making a whole bunch of cartoonists who no longer have to figure out how to deal with a book distributor to get the material before some kind of an audience. And as people develop what they can make on that screen that's specific to its... Comic books are as different from comic strips, ultimately, when you think about what they are, daily little bursts rather than a whole book of a story, as the internet will be, to say the least, from comic books. And it's an interesting but separate medium. Comic books are now, as they're being called, graphic novels, books of comics, have a specific property that make them more resistant to internet osmosis than most other books. Like a Kindle can show you a novel by Jacqueline Suzanne or a novel by James Joyce or whatever, and it'll look the same till you enter into it. But comics are object specific. They're made for the site that they're printed on. The artist thinks about whether he's making a large-scale book, a small-scale book, a book to be made in black and white or a book to be made in color, book where the paper feels one way or another. It's all part and parcel of what my independent cartoonist friends and I talk about when we're talking about the projects we're working on. It's not something to be decided later, and it's not something that's extraneous to the work. It's the very fabric of the work.
So I think the future is in greater appreciation of the book object, and that's where comics can lead the way, and certainly lead kids into falling in love with those book objects, which is why when we're doing the Toon books, we're doing them in a way that the kid feels like this is respectful of her attention, that this is something that she can go back to over and over again. And, you know, we've seen many kids like walking around petting the books, putting them under their pillows, that something that they can appropriate and live with. So that's a wonderful way to see the books come into the world.
And also the one last thing I wanted to say with that, when you're talking about that with the Toon books, they are beautiful. They look, if you look at just even the outside of it, they come across almost as collector's items and things that people would want to have in a library to keep, you know, but they're very accessible.
Yeah, collector's item for the five-year-old, yes. That's
and they can be great collectors, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what you should give them. I mean, rather than a plastic toy with batteries that are going to run out, to actually give them a printed object that can deliver joy over and over again, I think that's very important. One of the advantage of a book for kids that age is, I think, they feel that the world is very, and it is, the world is very chaotic, and certainly anything that is on the internet is a flow and a flux of information, but a book is engraved, it stays the same through each reading, and that's actually helpful, reassuring. That's exactly what a child needs to develop like a thinking structure.
Well, Françoise and Art, thank you very much for talking with me.
Thanks.
Thank you so much, Susan.